Belinda presents this unabridged recording of The Amber Owl, Hartwood, Book 1, written by Juliette Marillier and read by Emma Drysdale. To my family, with heartfelt thanks for your ongoing love and support. 1. Stasia.
I saved a life this morning, she said.
Really? Tell me.
Lucas tilted his curly head back against the great sun-warmed rock and closed his eyes. This was their precious time. Here on the edge of Hartwood Forest, they could look down over the sloping field where Lucas often brought the goats in the late afternoon and share tales. The old ones about the forest, of which there were many, and new ones they invented as they went along. At some distance below them lay the settlement, whose sounds, someone chopping firewood, the creak of cartwheels, children shouting as they chased a ball, were muted. After her long day's work, in this place, Stasia could breathe. The many voices of the great forest came to her, from the song of wind in the tall pines to the scuttle of tiny feet in the undergrowth. Flip had crept onto her lap and now lay curled up there, a small warm presence, dreaming. High above, birds exchanged calls. Not far off, a stream flowed over stones, making a rippling music. It was down near the burial ground, when I was on the way to Vida's farm. I'd been helping him with the sheep today. You know that paling fence, the one with the carving at the top? I saw a lot of magpies close by. They were acting oddly, coming in close, then edging away. And so quiet, not a sound. She couldn't tell the full truth, even to the trusted friend she'd known since they were children. Lucas knew she sometimes saved creatures in trouble. What he didn't know, what nobody but Flip knew, was that she could open her mind to theirs, understand their thoughts, and share her own with them. If that gift ever became public knowledge, she wouldn't only be labelled strange, weird, a loner. They'd call her a witch, and she'd be lucky to escape with her life. I came up closer, she went on, and I saw a magpie hanging from the fence. Its neck was wedged between two of the uprights, and it was completely limp. I was sure it was dead. But the other birds were all looking at me, waiting for something. I came in close and put my hands around the hanging one, thinking I could at least give it a kind burial. And then Stasia paused, glancing at Lucas. He was tired from his long day on the family farm, but the look in his eyes told her he'd been captured by the tale. Even Flip was sitting up, ears pricked, wanting more. And then I felt it twitch. It was still alive. I eased it upward as gently as I could, talking to it all the time, hoping that might help. She'd spoken to it, not only in words, but also in mind pictures. There, brave one. You're safe now. And look, your friends are all waiting for you. I thought it might be terribly injured or too weak to fly, but as soon as I opened my hands, it was off into the trees, and the others went with it, bursting into song. It sounded like they were saying, "Free! You're free!" Lucas gave a sigh of content. A wonderful, true story. You'll be a friend of magpies from now on, but maybe you already are. They sat in silence for a while, simply enjoying each other's company. Stasia thought how lucky she was to have such a true friend. When she'd been sent to Hartwood to live with grandmother as a child, the other boys and girls had taunted her, calling her freak or crybaby. From the first, Lucas had defended her, though he was only a little older. He'd understood that sometimes she couldn't find the words people wanted, and sometimes had so much in her mind that it was like a flood, drowning her, so the only thing she could get out was a scream. He'd known there were times when she needed to be alone. Like most people in the village, Lucas's family still thought her odd. They did talk to her sometimes, had to when they needed her to work for them. All the local farmers knew she had a knack for keeping animals calm. None of them questioned that, not to her face anyway, because it was so useful. But Lucas's parents did not want her as a friend. Not for themselves, and especially not for their only son. That had never changed, even though Lucas and Stasia were no longer children, but man and woman. "Your turn now," she said, "unless you're too tired." Lucas sat up straighter, putting his arms around his knees. "I'm never too tired for a story. This one is called Cake Magic." He made Stasia laugh with a tale about three brothers on a quest to find treasure, and how two were tricked by a wily monster that stole the first brother's best shoes and the second brother's lucky hat. The third brother found the way to the monster's secret hoard by offering a share of the excellent plum cake he had baked and brought with him. Nobody had ever given the monster a gift before, and he was so delighted he handed the young man a bag of gold in exchange. By the time the tale was done, the goats were gathering in the lowest corner of the field by the gate. Time for the shelter of the barn and a warm bed for the night. They knew the dark was coming. "I'd best be moving them on," Lucas said, rising to his feet. He reached out a hand to help Stasia up. "Thanks. See you tomorrow?" "If I can." There was a shadow over his features now. "Father wants me for slaughtering in the morning, and there's other work later." No need to ask more. The goats weren't kept only for milk, but also for meat. Slaughtering was just part of the job. And although Farmer Jorgis had other helpers, he knew his son was best at doing it, swift and sure, so the creatures didn't have time to be frightened. If they were spooked, Jorgis said, it spoiled the meat. Lucas did what he had to do. The farm would be his one day, and his father needed him. But he hated the killing. His goats were dear to him. They all had names of his choosing. Stasia saw the pain in his eyes and knew he would lie awake in the dark. Jorgis had asked her to help with that job once, and she'd said no, even when he offered her a substantial payment in the household goods that sustained her and Flip. Lucas had been furious with his father. "You do it as well as anyone could," Stasia told him. Lucas gave a half nod. He kept hold of her hand. After a little, she said, "I'd best go now. Come up and see me tomorrow if you can. Later on, it might help." "I may not be fit for company," he attempted a smile. "If you can't sleep tonight, think of good tales, not sad ones." "I'll try." She watched him go. A fine man now, taller than his father. He shepherded the flock out of the field, made sure the gate was securely fastened, raised a hand to her in farewell as he headed down toward the farm. Stasia's home was the other way, further along the forest edge. She took a long looping path past the ancestor. While Flip investigated something among the roots, Stasia paused, as always, to lay a hand on the great oak's trunk and thank the tree for watching over the valley and the settlement. The ancestor spread her limbs wide, offering shade to all who passed. Her hollows and crevices had housed a myriad of small animals over the years. In the shelter of her canopy, generations of birds had reared their young. Her acorns had nourished squirrels through the chill winter. Her fallen timbers had been carved into objects of beauty. They had warmed both hearths and hearts. The folk of the village gathered by the tree to celebrate betrothals and hand fastings, to give thanks for babes safely born, to sing farewell to folk who had passed to the afterlife. The ancestor had guarded the people of Hartwood Settlement since a time before memory. Stasia murmured farewell, then gathered Flip up and walked home to the cottage that had been theirs since the bleak season, when grandmother had died, peacefully in her bed, when Stasia was 11 years old. The place suited her. It was far enough from the settlement to deter unwanted visitors, but near enough so she could present herself quickly for work if someone needed her. Best of all, It was right on the forest edge. She could walk under the trees every day, drink in the sights and smells and feelings, let her mind fill with new stories and old. She could check that all was well, tend to creatures that needed her, and keep a watchful eye on all growing things, as grandmother had for most of her lifetime. Sometimes Lucas came with her. More often Stasia went alone. If the tales and rumours didn't keep folk out of the forest, fear of wolves and bears did. People would venture in a certain distance to gather firewood, but once the task was done, they'd be quickly out again. Back at the cottage, she kindled a fire on her little hearth, heated water, cooked herself a meal of vegetable soup. The baker, Irina, had given her a small loaf in part payment for yesterday's work, and most of it was still left. It would go well with the soup. She'd be helping at the bakery again in the morning, but she'd be free after that, unless some new need for her arose. "We might go walking, Flip," she said aloud. "Up as far as Toad Rock, hmm?" She pictured the place in her mind, but Flip was gnawing on something she had brought in from outside and did not respond. The little dog preferred to catch her own food, which was fine with Stasia, provided she dispatched her prey swiftly and not too close to the house. After the meal, they sat a while by the hearth, and Stasia used mind pictures to tell Flip her favourite bedtime story, which was the true tale of how she'd found the dog trapped in brambles deep in the forest and brought her home years ago. Later still, after Stasia had taken off her work clothes, an old tunic and trousers that belonged to Lucas, she put on her nightrobe. She and Flip lay in bed as the long twilight gave slow way to night. They fell asleep to the sighing of wind in the pines and the soft calls of owls. That was the last good day. 2. Stasia. Stasia woke to a rumbling noise, men shouting, horses neighing. Flip was off the bed in a flash by the closed door, quivering with tension. "Wait." Flip calmed the familiar command. In some ways, she was quite like an ordinary dog, but Stasia knew something was wrong, badly wrong. She got out of bed and opened the shutters a crack. She was wary of uninvited guests, especially at this hour. The light told her it was not yet dawn. Nobody was outside her house, as far as she could tell. But the sound was everywhere. Something was happening down at the settlement, trouble of some kind. The shouting went on and on, a family argument that had blown up into something worse, perhaps. But there were many voices in it, more all the time. When a dispute happened, the village elders would generally step in and make sure everyone calmed down and sorted out their problems without the need for blows. The high-up folk, the ones who made up the laws and rules of the Northlands and ensured ordinary people abided by them, were too far away to trouble themselves with a small, remote settlement like Hartwood. There was trade between Hartwood and the two nearest villages. Goat meat for grain, cheeses for wool, oil for beeswax candles and so on. That went on smoothly, for the most part. Once or twice there had been a visit by a priest from the Church of the Godly. Grandmother had warned Stasia about such folk, and she had made sure she stayed at home behind a closed door when he was in the settlement. But mostly Hartwood was left to look after itself. The noise became louder. Someone was making a speech or shouting what might be a speech. She needed to know what was happening. She was supposed to go down to the bakery for work later, but the thought of being in a crowd with people yelling made her feel sick. "We'll walk along to the lookout," she said, picturing it in her thoughts. She had never been quite sure if Flip understood human speech as well as the silent language of the mind. "Just far enough to see what's going on." She performed a quick change, nightrobe off, tunic and trousers on, shawl over the top. She ran her fingers through her hair, pushing it back from her face. "Stay with me," she told Flip, showing the dog what she meant. "Keep close and keep quiet." She bent to give Flip a quick scratch behind the ears, both reassurance and sign of trust. From the lookout, there would be a partial view of the village square, the community's main gathering place. At this hour, there were usually few folk about, though some would be starting the working day. Irina would have a fire lit in her big stove, readying it for the first batch of bread, and on the nearby farms, people would be rising to tend to their animals. Poor Lucas, how he would hate his morning's work. By the time Stasia reached their lookout, the rumbling sound had died down, but the voices were louder, angry, shouting, not just one man, but many. Women's voices too. Then a roaring command, silence. There were lights down there, uneven, flickering, torches. As she came up to the vantage point, her heart thumped in shock. Flipped moved closer, pressing against her leg. The scent Stasia got from her was bad. Very bad. Go back. Hide. The square was full of people. Outsiders. Men on horseback. So many of them. Wearing leather jerkins, knee boots, belts with weapons strung on them. Cloaks for travelling. Some wore leather helms. One carried a flag with a dragon on it. Further back along the road stood carts with teams of heavy horses still in harness. That explained the rumbling. Where had they come from so early? These horses were weary from a long journey. Stasia felt their exhaustion in every bone of her body. The shouting man was standing on the steps outside the village hall. His call for silence hadn't calmed things much. Within the circle of armed riders, trapped there almost, were local folk, gesturing, arguing, calling out. Stasia thought she saw Farmer Jorgis. He too was shouting. What was all this about? Bad, conveyed Flip again. Not safe. Home now. Hide. Lucas was down there. He was with his father. And there was Irina at the door of the bakery with her son Thomas behind her. She had her arms out as if to shield him. Chill fingers gripped Stasia's heart. I can't run away, she told Flip. I need to know what this is. No, no closer. Flip edged back, as if she might bolt for home on her own. I'm working for Irina this morning. I'll have to go down there sometime. Stasia showed Flip an image of herself in the bakery, kneading dough on the work table. I will go. The mind picture showed a small bird flying down to the square, settling unobtrusively in the young linden tree beside the village hall. Flip did not wait for approval. The change was almost instant, dog to house sparrow. A quick ruffle of the wings, and she was away. Don't! Stasia breathed far too late. Not that it would have stopped Flip. She had been her own mistress almost from the first, as soon as she'd recovered from whatever disaster had left her alone in the forest. Stasia bit her lip as she watched the tiny bird wing her way toward the square. This did make sense. In that form, Flip could stay unnoticed down there. Watch and listen, bring back news. She understood the danger that lay in her ability to change her shape. Though every instinct pulled her to follow, Stasia knew she must watch and wait. There was constant motion in and around the square. Now the armed men were splitting the villagers up, herding them one way or another. Barked orders, furious protests, blows. Who were these people? And why would they do this? Where had they come from to reach Hartwood so early? Some of them were starting to unload the carts. Were those tools of some kind? The harnessed horses were restless, stamping, tossing their heads, unnerved by the press of folk. Their distress weighed on Stasia. She closed her eyes, but the feeling was still there. Wariness, confusion, alarm, a deep need to return to a known place, a safe place. Just as well Flip had stopped her from rushing down there. At closer quarters, she would have struggled to keep any shield over her mind. She might have felt compelled to act, to relieve that distress in some way, and that could have led to disaster. Best go home now, before someone spotted her. In the cottage, her mind whirring with unanswerable questions, She went through the motions of an ordinary start to the day. She kindled a very small fire. She heated water, washed and dried herself, brushed her hair and did her best to tie it back neatly. The amber owl watched her from the shelf where she'd placed it for safekeeping. Now she put the amulet back where it belonged, around her neck, on its cord, under her tunic. Foolish, perhaps, to wear such a treasure every day, when she might be working with cattle or climbing ladders, but the owl was special. It belonged with her. They'd found the amber in the lake they'd named Clearwater, which was the furthest she and Lucas had ever ventured into Hartwood together. It had taken them a full day to get there and back, and Lucas's parents had asked some awkward questions afterwards, but it had been such an adventure. Lucas was clever with a knife, and he'd carved an owl from the amber and given it to her on the first day of spring. It was precious, perfect, and full of magic. Stasia had known that from the first moment. In the privacy of her cottage, she could wear the little talisman openly. When she was among other folk, she made sure her clothing concealed it, if only to avoid the narrow gaze of Lucas's mother, Razma, in whose plans for her son's future Stasia most certainly played no part. Stasia shivered. Razma, Jorgis, Irina and Thomas, Lucas and his sisters, the old folk of the settlement, all of them, down there in that great press of people and horses and carts, the anger, the violence, the arrival so early in the day, she could make no sense of it. And Flip still hadn't come back. Had she too been caught up in it all? She made herself draw a deep, steadying breath. This was meant to be a bakery day. Irina would be expecting her. She should brew tea, have something to eat, get ready for work as she'd usually do on such a morning. But she had no appetite for food. And what if one of them spotted smoke rising from her chimney and came up the hill to investigate? Forget the tea. Let the fire die, cold as the morning was. She felt sick, sick and scared. If Lucas had been with her, this would have been the moment to ask him for a story. There were plenty of tales for comfort. There was one for every occasion, more than one. But her mind was filled with a rising dread. She felt like a bird at the mercy of a capricious wind. Go. Stay. Be brave. Be cautious. Pack a bag for the day's work. Climb back into bed. Shut your eyes. Wish it all away. She found herself pacing, four strides across the room, four back again, hugging her shawl around her. Every part of her was strung tight. Her jaw hurt from clenching her teeth so hard. Her eyes fell on the image hanging on the wall above the storage chest. Its once jewel-bright colours, now darkened with age and smoke, and she made herself be still, made herself gaze on the woman in the picture and breathe. The woman looked back. A thing of paint and canvas she might be, an artist's creation from long ago, when grandmother was young. But there was a life in her that had never died. Those eyes saw you. They saw deep within, and what they offered was reassurance. Trust yourself. You will get through this. Whether the painted woman was a saint or a deity of some ancient faith, Stasia had never been sure. The only name grandmother had given her was the Mother. In the painting, there was a stream running by her feet and a waterfall behind her. And there were creatures too, painted small, an eel, an otter, a long-legged wading bird, a dragonfly. The sky in the image had once been of the deepest blue and the sun almost like gold. Whenever grandmother had performed a ritual, she'd included words of respect to the mother. If not a goddess, Stasia thought, the woman in the painting was certainly more than mortal, a kindly spirit of rivers and streams, perhaps. When she and Lucas had found Clearwater, Stasia had imagined her there, sitting on the bank in the quiet, with her bare feet in the water and her creatures around her. Maybe she should try to conjure a vision, something that might make sense of what was happening beyond her safe walls. But no, for that she needed the fire, could not risk it. She would wait until the end of the day, when folk were abed. Then she would seek wisdom in the flames. Stasia felt Flip coming before the little bird flew in. The two seldom shielded their minds from each other. They shared each other's pain and joy, good news and ill, provided the distance between them was not too far. She knew this news was bad, so bad that Flip could hardly hold it in her tiny, quivering body. She changed, bird to dog, and Stasia gathered her up, making soothing sounds. Flip leaned against her chest, her whole body trembling. Stasia made herself wait as Flip calmed and her breathing slowed. She stroked the little dog's back. From down in the settlement came crashing sounds. They must be still unloading those carts. Where could so many horses be taken to rest? There were times when Stasia wished Flip could talk in human words, times when images were not enough, but they had learned to understand each other well. Flip lifted her head, looked Stasia in the eye. A flow of pictures came. A big angry man with a dark beard, his riding clothes part covered by a tunic with the image of a dragon on it. He shouted orders. When the villagers protested, the armed men moved in. Some bore long staves. People were struck down. Others struggled to help friends or family in the crush and were themselves felled. The chaos increased as some of the villagers tried to leave the square and were blocked by the men on horseback. It looked as if the newcomers were making the local men unload the carts. And on the first cart, when the covering of oiled cloth was stripped back, were great saws and axes and other tools. Farmer Jorgis was arguing with the big man. Two guards grabbed him and held him in place while the big man struck him across the face hard. And Lucas was about to leap to his father's defense, only Jorgis gave him a look that meant, "Don't do it, son," and Lucas retreated, melting back into the crowd. But what does it mean? Why are they here? Stasia could not show this as a picture. She set Flip down on the floor and gestured instead, arms out, with palms up, brows lifted. "Bad. All bad. Go. Hide." Flip scurried across the room, leaped onto the bed and burrowed under the covers, vanishing from sight. There was a part of Stasia that longed to do just the same, but she couldn't. What use would hiding away be? At the very least, she should show up at the bakery as she'd promised. The work of the settlement still had to be done. Irina was expecting her. She made mind pictures for Flip, the little dog sleeping the day away under the blanket, herself at the bakery mixing, kneading, shaping loaves, tending the fire in the big stove, wiping down the work table, sweeping the floor. Herself again, coming home as the light faded, and the two of them peaceful before their hearth fire in the quiet of evening. Flip made a sound of disapproval. She did not so much as poke her nose out of the bedding. Stasia checked her bag. She put on her boots. It had been chilly outside earlier. She took off the shawl and donned the padded jacket of felted wool that had been grandmother's, a garment whose many shades of brown and green were in some way comforting. Wearing it reminded her of the wisdom grandmother had shared with her, the lore of forests, the care of trees and plants and creatures, the deep understanding of ancient things. Since the very first day she'd come to live in this cottage, Stasia had been learning. It amazed her still to think that Hartwood was only one of several great forests within the Northlands. She had never travelled further than Vita's Hope, where the market was held. It could be that each forest had its own kind of trees, its own lakes and valleys and ancient stones, its own old tales. Maybe each had someone like Grandmother, who knew ways to help things grow and thrive. Now Grandmother was gone, and Hartwood only had Stasia. She had to find her own learning. She pulled a woolen hat over her hair, and with a whispered goodbye, perhaps to Flip, perhaps to the painted woman, she slipped out the door. In the square, everything was wrong. She could make no sense of it. The leather-clad men were directing things, or so it seemed. Stasia did her best to be unobtrusive. She was good at that. It helped her steer clear of awkward conversations, but it was hard with folks scurrying about everywhere. Local men were still unloading carts. Some were carrying tools and other bundles towards the covered storage area at the back of the village hall. Two of the outsiders were unharnessing the first team of draft horses. Stasia could feel the animals' relief, tinged with unease, for this was not their familiar place of rest. Across the square, two village women were supporting an injured man. She could not see who it was, but he could barely walk. One of the outsiders barked an order at them. "Move on! You're in the way!" And one of the women, it was Marina, who kept chickens, turned her head and swore at him. The speaker strode forward as if he might strike her, but halted when the bell outside the village hall rang out. All heads turned toward it. Stasia seized the moment and sprinted for the bakery. The door was shut. She pushed, but it did not budge. It must be barred from inside. Rising panic, so many people, so much noise, threatened to drown her. She hammered on the door with a fist, and a voice came from inside. "We're closed! Go away!" Thomas, sounding shaky and terrified. "Thomas, it's me, Stasia. Let me in, quick!" Silence. "Thomas, open up, please!" The door creaked open. A white-faced Thomas peered through, his eyes shadowed. He pulled the door just wide enough for Stasia to squeeze through, then slammed it shut. She dropped her bag and helped him push the bolt home. "Where's Arena? Is she all right? Do you know what's happening, Thomas?" The bakery was warm. The fire was on in the big stove. From the scattering of flour and the mixing bowls on the table, it was clear Arena had started the day's work before the outsiders put a violent stop to the pattern of life in Hartwood Settlement. What do those people want? They made Mother go to the hall for a meeting, they said. They told all the elders to go there. Mother said I should stay in here. She said not to open the door for anyone. Thomas was big for his age. He looked older than his 11 years. But right now he was a frightened child. He said, that man said they came from the ruler. They want to cut a path through the forest all the way to the hermit, broad enough for carts. They're going to stay here until it's done. That's what he said. But they couldn't do that, could they? How could anyone do that? Stasia had no words. It couldn't be. It wasn't possible. It had been hard enough for her and Lucas to make a steep, winding progress on foot as far as Clearwater. There were no paths through Hartwood Forest, save those of bear, deer and wolf. The trees grew close, and there were many. Higher up the terrain was steep. The hermit was far away. There was no telling how long such a journey would take, save that it would be many days. And that was before you considered the stories, of which not a single person had ever reached the hermit and come safely home again. Could this man be intending... Could he really mean... Stasia, he couldn't do it, could he? She struggled for a calm tone. I don't think anyone could, Thomas. Why? Why would he want to do such a thing? I heard him say something about treasure. Hidden treasure. You know, like in the old stories? Stasia made herself breathe. She swallowed the howl of rage that was building inside her, counted to 10 silently. There was a verse Grandmother had taught her, something that helped when her thoughts went crazy, but right now the words wouldn't come. Her mind was saying, I should go there right now, to the meeting, explain to them why they can't do this. She opened her mouth to tell Thomas this, but left the words unsaid. His face showed her she couldn't leave him on his own, and she wouldn't take him out there. She cast her eye over the preparations on the table. The bread. They'll still need the bread. Will you help me? 3. Rihard. A town meeting, or rather, a village meeting. This place was a straggling hamlet at best, remote, insignificant. These were simple folk, grabbing a living from the dirt, ignorant of the world outside their own little patch of ground. How hard should it be to gather their leaders and get the message through with his men to keep order? But these people did not know their place. They were unruly, wild, deaf to authority. When Lady Elisabetta had laid out the mission for him, he had known there would be challenges. He had planned for it. What he had not expected was a pig-headed lack of cooperation on the very first day. His men already had 5 or 6 of these wretched folk in custody, shackled to the back of a cart for want of better options. This had to be sorted out right now. He could not afford to fail. Let me make it clearer for you, he said, speaking slowly. How many times would he need to explain the situation before the message got into their thick skulls? Perhaps you have not heard that Lady Elisabetta is ruler now, taking the position after the death of her uncle, our beloved Lord Casimir, may he rest in peace. Had he been speaking in private, beloved was the last word he would have chosen. Never mind that. Casimir was gone. A brighter future beckoned. It is your ruler's command that a path be cut through Hartwood Forest. For too long, the treasure known to be hidden at the Hermit has lain untouched. A treasure that might change all our lives. Untold wealth. The key to a power and influence such as this land has never known. The folk who had entered the hall, the so-called elders of Hartwood, an unimpressive lot, were silent now. Their expressions were somewhat blank. Their eyes lacked the fire he had hoped his words might kindle. Make it personal. He imagined one of the ruler's advisers suggesting that. It was a sort of thing Alexis would say. Nonsense, of course. But perhaps it might help him get through to these dull-witted folk. He cleared his throat, drew himself up tall. Success in this mission could transform your settlement completely. He made himself look around the room, trying to meet every eye. God, this place was shabby. How could people live like this? Village hall. Rickety old shed, more like. It could bring untold wealth and prosperity to this district. Opportunities for trade. Work for everyone. The wherewithal to mend your houses, to increase your herds, to extend your pastures, to live a life of honour, of respect. Silence. He'd done it. He'd captured their attention at last. Then a voice rang out. At what cost? The fellow was tallish, with a head of greying curls. His tone was defiant. Before Rihard could respond, other voices chimed in, each of them as angry as the first. Had none of them heard a word he'd said? You can't cut a path through Hartwood. It's dense forest. The trees are hundreds of years old. We have one of the most ancient oaks in the Northlands right here in the village. What do you mean, to live a life of respect? We're fine just as we are. How much respect did your men show when they struck out with their staves? It was a woman speaking, her sleeves rolled up and an apron covering her gown, as if she had been midway through some task when the meeting was called. When they manhandled our folk and frightened our children, where's the honour in that? Rihard drew a deep breath. You will address me as sir, he said,
loudly enough to silence the preposterous questions. Or, Commander, I am here on orders from the ruler. As for the forest, trees can be felled. Undergrowth can be scythed. I saw plenty of fit men out there, well able to help with the work. A babble of voices now. A dozen of them were trying to speak at once. He gestured to his men, who were stationed around the margins of the hall. As one, they took a step forward. Be silent, he called. You're not here to raise objections, but to hear our plan and ensure your people are prepared for the work ahead. He set it out for them, that all able-bodied men aged 15 or over should immediately put aside their usual work so they could assist in the great enterprise under the direction of himself or his deputies, that a camp would be set up to accommodate his men, that an enclosed building such as a barn should be provided as part of that camp, that appropriate stabling and fodder should be provided for the horses, that meals should be supplied for his men as required. It was only reasonable. What do you mean, set aside our usual work? Who's going to look after the stock? Do the spring planting? What about lambing? And how are we supposed to feed so many folk? Where are the supplies? It was the same troublesome fellow again, the one with a shock of curls. Your women can shoulder the work of the farms. The old folk and the youngsters can lend a hand. You may need to slaughter a few extra beasts to provide for us, a minor setback in view of the opportunities ahead. An old woman spoke, vinegar sour. That talk of treasure hidden up at the hermit, sir, it's all old tales, you know. Same as the stories about spirits and fairy folk and the like. Nobody's ever been up there. You can't reach the place unless you're a fox or a bird. Yet you talk as if there's gold lying on the mountain, just waiting, easy pickings. Where's your proof? Someone else called out. By all the powers, would this go on forever? Time to make the message plain. Enough of this. You will obey orders. You will provide the support I require. Any refusal to cooperate will be met with severe punishment, and that applies to elders. He gave the word a particular emphasis, as much as to the more lowly folk of your settlement, such as those we already have in custody. Do I make myself clear? The voices had died down. He was getting through to them at last. And unless you're content to have the disobedient shackled to a cart day and night, you'll set about finding that empty barn I mentioned, and some workers to shape it into something more suitable. Understand? Again, no response. That fellow with the curls was looking anything but compliant. He'd need watching. You, Rihard pointed. What is your name? What does a name matter if you plan to treat us as less than human? That was it. Enough. Talk was useless. The situation required action. A glance at his deputies and a jerk of the head were enough. Take that nameless man into custody. Another jerk in the direction of the apron-wearing woman. And her. As his men moved to apprehend the two troublemakers, he addressed the remaining folk, who were restless, muttering objections, likely to get themselves hurt as they attempted to stop the arrests. Not that he'd care much, but there were some strong-looking individuals among them, useful for the job ahead. Better to keep them capable of work. This meeting is over, he announced, as the two were removed from the hall. Get out there. Tell your people what's expected of them and what the consequences will be if they refuse to comply. And make it quick. Sir, a voice from the back of the hall as the others made their exit. I said it's over. Are you deaf or half-witted, man? Sir, Irina, the woman your men just took out, she's the village baker. All of us rely on her. Rihard gestured towards the door, and the fellow left without another word. What was wrong with these people? Couldn't their wives or mothers bake bread? Commander,
Leonas, one of his deputies, had come to stand by him. A pox take these people! They're deaf to reason! He drew a deep breath, forced himself calm. Yes, what is it, Leonas? The woman, Irina. I'm told she bakes for the whole settlement. Many loaves daily. She's all set up for it and she knows what she's doing. Would you consider releasing her? There's nowhere else in the village to bake on such a large scale. I can warn her of consequences if she doesn't keep her mouth shut. Leonas was not quite meeting his eye, but both his deputies were reliable. They wouldn't have gained promotion if there'd been any doubt of that. Very well, tell them to release her, but make sure she knows the risk to her bakery and to her family if she doesn't keep her mouth shut. These folk must understand from the very first that we will not tolerate subordination. Yes, Commander. We'll want double the usual number of loaves today, and tell her that's likely to increase. Yes, Commander. One thing was plain, he thought as he followed his deputy out. Talk was a waste of time. Give these folk a chance to answer back and they'd keep it up until their last breath. What was needed was a display, something bold and spectacular. Thanks to that farce of a meeting, he knew just what it would be. 4. Stasia. Twice the usual number of loaves. It meant the three of them were too busy to talk much. Because Thomas had been there when his mother came back from the meeting, ashen-faced, Stasia suspected Irina's account of it had been missing the more confronting details. She'd told them what the commander had said, and that folk were angry. The three of them needed to stay in the bakery with the doors closed and bolted, she'd said, which meant they were hot, sweaty, and now that a good part of the work was done, almost too tired to go on. But they had to, and not just until the end of the day. There'd be tomorrow, and the next day, and however long the outsiders needed feeding. Another batch of loaves out of the oven, set to cool on the wire rack, a fresh batch into the heat. Stasia stretched, trying to ease her aching back. Thomas was sweeping again. I'll brew a pot of tea. Irina sounded the way she looked, weary to the bone but determined to get the job finished. Sit down, the two of you. Take a break. You've done well. Stasia fetched out the cups. If she sat down, she thought she might never get up. Under the exhaustion that came from a long day's work, there was a crawling uneasiness deep inside her. What was happening beyond the bakery doors? Could it actually be true that they meant to cut down trees to hack their way into the forest? Maybe it was all talk. Maybe she'd walk out that door and the nightmare would be over. Maybe the intruders had already seen how ridiculous the idea was and called a halt. But her gut told her no. Irina's face told her no. And she couldn't ask, not with Thomas listening. Anyone could see he was scared half out of his wits. They sat, drinking their tea. Stasia tried to distract herself by guessing which herbs were in the blend. But she could not forget the sounds that had come all day through the small high windows of the bakery. Cartwheels again, hoofbeats, a lot of shouting, the words unclear, heavy things being dragged about. As the day passed, there'd been a few knocks on the door. Once it had been Razma, desperate for help with Jorgis in custody, and Lucas off helping to set up a camp for the outsiders. With neither man available to deal with slaughtering the goats, and the demand for meat likely to be high, could Stasia please come and help her with the job? Dread had overcome Stasia. She had slumped down onto a bench with her floury hands over her face. Through the bolted door, Irina had spoken kindly to Razma, telling her Stasia was indispensable at the bakery and would be for some days. Marina came later, asking if Thomas could be spared to keep an eye on her young children while she killed and plucked some hens. Again, Irina said no through the closed door. Stasia heard the iron in the baker's voice and the love and fear beneath it. This time she managed to keep a fragile control over herself, but she longed for the solitude of her cottage and Flip's company, would the long day never end? She walked home in twilight, her churning thoughts at war with her tired and aching body. She slipped out the back way, pretending she was a creature evading wolves, using what she'd learned over season after season in the forest. She'd managed to get past the guards patrolling the settlement and to avoid the eyes of some local men who were carrying lengths of timber down toward Vitas's farm, knowing that if they saw her, they would likely ask her to help. Strong she might be, but after today's work she felt incapable of carrying more than the loaf Irina had insisted she take home, despite the need to fulfill the double order. "You can't work if you don't eat," the baker had said. "And you can come in a bit later tomorrow. You need sleep. I'll ask Agnese to help for a few hours." Agnese was one of the village grandmothers. She was too old for the heavy work, but there were plenty of tasks she'd be able to handle. Deep in Heartwood Forest, the owls were waking. As she climbed the path toward home, Stasia wrapped her hand around her talisman, the tiny form warming against her palm. She wondered if Lucas was safely home. She wondered if his mother had managed the goat killing without help. Lucas had sisters. The eldest, Christina, was only 2 years her brother's junior and capable at household tasks. But Stasia could not imagine her wielding the knife or holding a creature still and calm while her mother performed the grim job. Christina's chief talent was fine embroidery. Her kerchiefs, shawls and skirts sold for good prices at the market in Vita's Hope. Being shut in the bakery all day had spared Stasia from the terrible tide of fear those goats must have endured. The distress of the draft horses, inadequately cared for after a grueling journey. The sorrows and hurts of 1,000 small lives beyond the walls. She had wondered, often, why her gift did not work the same way with her fellow humans. Their thoughts and feelings she had to read from their eyes, their expressions, their movements and gestures as anyone else might. Perhaps that was just as well. Who would want to see into the mind of that shouting man, the one they called the Commander? Surely he was full of remembered hurts and imagined horrors. His goodness buried so deep in dark things that even the most magical of stories could not call it out. Home at last. The moon was rising. Its light allowed Stasia to open the door, find flint and tinder, take the knife from her belt, and start a fire on the small hearth. She lit a candle, whose wavering light showed two bright eyes watching her from the bed. "Have you been there all day, Flip?" She showed Flip a mind picture, the little dog rolled in blankets, only her nose showing as the sun moved across the sky. Showed, "I'm tired, and I'm glad to see you." She filled her kettle from the water bucket and hung it over the fledgling fire. Put on more wood as the flames grew stronger. Crouched down beside it and tried not to shed tears. A long, long day. All she wanted was to get warm and go to sleep, hoping for a night of no dreams. Flip left the bed with not a leap, but with a flight. The small brown owl landed precisely on Stasia's shoulder. No need for a mind picture here. The message was perfectly clear. A ritual. Now is the time. Owl form meant the seeking of visions, the search for answers that went beyond the everyday. "Too tired," Stasia showed her. "Worn out. Sad. I'll do it tomorrow." As she prepared for bed, she recognized the painful truth. After a day like this, she was afraid of what such a vision might show. She woke with a start. Something bad. Something so terrible. Her heart clenched tight and her blood ran cold. "Flip? Flip, where are you?" It was light outside. She had slept late. The little dog emerged from deep under the blanket. Her eyes were wide open, her body tight with trouble. The scent Stasia got from her was wrong, all wrong. It was cold in the cottage. Stasia threw on her shawl and went to open the shutters. The sounds were different this morning. No rolling of cartwheels, no neighing of troubled horses, but something. The horror that had gripped her with her first waking breath grew deeper. A grinding, metallic sound, not so very far away. Could they already... Could it be... I have to see, she said out loud. I have to go. I have to... She struggled into outdoor clothing, clumsy with distress. She shoved her feet into her boots. Why was it so hard to breathe? Why did it sound like she was sobbing? Let me be wrong, she whispered. Please, please let me be wrong. But the feeling inside never lied, and now it was a scream of cutting and hurting and death, of things gone so terribly awry that there might be no fixing them, not in 1,000 years. Without a doubt, the sound she heard was made by a great saw. Careful, warned Flip, showing an image of men moving between the settlement and the forest's edge, and someone with a staff in their hands, stepping out to block Stasia's way along the path. I have to see. I have to know. A physical pain in her belly now, sharp and insistent, making it hard to walk out the door. Even hard to set one foot before the other. She was in no doubt of which way to go, straight for the ancestor. Flip had changed to sparrow form and kept pace with her, fluttering from one clump of bushes to the next. Not too close, the bird warned. Stay under cover. Don't let them see you. They crept along, keeping low. The soaring sound intensified. It was joined by creaking, groaning, and a shout. Watch out! It's coming down! From the shadow of the trees, Stasia saw it, and she felt the mortal blow. The ancestor fell. The sound of its landing was a doom, a curse, an ending to all good things. It took several smaller trees with it, and a scattering of debris flew in all directions. The men who had been wielding that great saw, four of them at each end, roped so they could work in tandem, now stood silent, shielding their heads from the shower of small branches, twigs and leaves. One of them was a tall young man with a crop of nut-brown curls. Stasia's legs would not support her. She collapsed to the ground with her hands over her eyes. She heard the crash over and over again, felt the little lives lost, squirrels, martens, owls, beetles, chicks still in the egg, smashed, crushed, broken. The pain was a great wave that broke and broke inside her. Home. Flip was on her shoulder, tiny beak tapping gently against her ear. Home now before they see you. There is nothing you can do. A pause, then a new thought. Later, when they are gone. The picture showed Stasia alone by the fallen giant, gathering something in a basket, and Flip herself, perched atop the trunk, watching for a ritual. I'm supposed to go to work. There was something wrong with Stasia's voice. It hurt to get the words out. She showed Flip bakery and Irina. Later, home now. Get up. Walk. Suddenly, Flip was a dog again. A bigger dog, tall enough for Stasia to lean on. Come with me. I will help you. This was a loss too great for tears. A wound not to be endured. How could Hartwood go on without the ancestor? How could she go on? It was as if some deep part of her had been ripped out and cast away, broken in pieces. Everyone in the village would feel this loss. Without the guardian tree, who would watch over their celebrations of new life, their farewells to loved ones departed? Nobody could remember a time when the ancestor had not been there. Stasia staggered home, her mind in turmoil. Inside the cottage, Flip was herself again, small enough to cuddle up close.
they sank down on the floor by the hearth, sharing their warmth. The sounds from out there had faded, but men would still be busy doing what needed to be done. Stasia could not stop shivering, could not summon the will to add even a single piece of wood to the fire. I should go down to the bakery. She did not think she could move, but Irina would be needing her. All I want is to be with her, the ancestor, to grieve beside her, and... Later, Flip showed again, an image of Stasia by the fallen oak, basket over her arm, gathering something. In that scene, the light was of late afternoon. We need not pass that place on the way to the bakery. Up now. If I meet that man, I will scream at him. I won't be able to stop myself. The scream was inside her now, building and building, waiting for its moment. Then make sure you don't meet him. You know how to do that. A new image came, the two of them dodging behind a dry stone wall, hiding behind a shed, creeping across open ground while guards patrolled not far away. Bakery. Now. No need to tell Irina what had happened. Everyone in the settlement knew. Everyone had watched the men go up the hill with the great saw, or heard the sound, and rushed outside to see the gash on the hillside, the gap in the forest, the crushing blow this day had inflicted on Hartwood. Thomas muttered a greeting, then went on sweeping. Agnese was painting a goat's milk glaze on a tray of rolls. She gave Stasia a dour nod. Irina did not put Stasia straight to work. "I'm guessing you didn't have breakfast," she said. "There's tea brewed. Sit down, have a drink before you start. And some of that fruit loaf." "Do it, Stasia. We have a whole day's work ahead. You need something in your stomach." Stasia managed the tea. The cup's warmth between her hands was welcome. She had no appetite for the bread. Nobody was saying much. Thomas was red-eyed. Irina looked worn out, even so early. Agnese kept her eyes on the work. Time passed, the rhythm of the working day, so well practiced that it flowed even on a morning such as this, did little to dull the pain. The scream waited in Stasia's body, a trembling mass of grief and fury biding its time. She worked as hard as she could, hoping to hold it back long enough. She whispered grandmother's verse to herself, the way she'd learned it, pausing at the end of each line, taking time to calm herself. "The oak's deep roots hold fast to the earth. I too will be strong. The graceful willow moves with the wind. I too will dance. The mighty ash towers to the heavens. I too will stretch high. The sun gleams on the still pool. I too will hold the light." Flip was a sparrow, perched in the tree outside. Stasia would have welcomed her company in the bakery, but Irina had made it plain long ago the dogs were not permitted to enter. And as far as the folk of the settlement knew, that was all Flip was. Her thoughts came to Stasia once or twice as the day advanced, showing her the men returning from their work of destruction, with Lucas among them. In the bakery, they did not speak about what had happened, but it was a silent presence in the room, weighing them down. Irina sent Stasia home early again, despite the late start, and she did not protest. At the cottage, she gathered what she needed: basket, small sharp knife, soft woolen scarf, and waited while Flip flew ahead to perform the necessary check. It did not take long. The sparrow returned with a message. "Nobody there. We can go." She had witnessed the fall of the giant. She had seen the devastation. But that was nothing like walking close. She touched the ancestor's rough bark, moving along the